The content in this magazine could contain references of topics and difficult subject matter that may be triggering. Please honour yourself, inner knowing, and proceed with whatever help or guidance you feel is intuitively aligned.
Welcome to the Sovereign Magazine podcast. I'm the founder of Sovereign, Nicole George, and I'm so happy you are here. Sovereign Magazine guides women to tune into and embody their highest selves. And in this podcast, you'll hear from women walking the path to self-discovery and empowerment, and who want to share their stories with you. Through heart-led conversations with our inspiring contributors, you'll hear the voices behind the articles written for our monthly digital online magazine. This is your chance to hear from women from all around the globe who are creating a movement based on the energy of the moon. Here's your host, Sovereign's in-house moon mentor, Miranda Murphy Gall.
Hello and welcome to our Sovereign front cover contributor for May, Shateya Baker. Shateya is a licensed clinical social worker, an author, and the CEO of Peaceful Therapy Services, Inc. Thank you so much for being with us here, Shateya. We are so happy to have you.
Thank you so much. I am so excited to be here.
Shateya, could you tell our listeners where you are located on this beautiful planet of ours?
I am in sunny California, Sacramento to be precise.
Beautiful. Shateya, Sovereign's May theme of the month is the need for stability. And I'd love to start by asking you exactly what the need for stability means to you.
That's a really, really good question. Stability for me is everything. It is how I think about homeostasis, peace, balance. The significance of that really just kind of says to me, I have to remain stable in whatever happens in my life. My kids' life, my family life, life in general, my business. The need for stability is everything, because the difference in that phrase is that for me, keyword is need. And a need is so much wider and bigger than a want. And because it's a need, I can't really live without it.
Yeah. So one of the things that people may not know about you is that you are an Air Force veteran. And so I wanted to thank you for your service and ask you a little bit about if being in the military had any bearing on your experience of stability.
Yes. I laugh because that was the first time that I was unstable. I was medically discharged from the United States Air Force, and I didn't know what to do with my life. For the first time ever, I was in my early 20s. I thought that I was going to be in the Air Force for 12 years. Prior to the Air Force, I was in ROTC for 4 years, which is a high school program. So I had been wearing the blue uniform from 14 to maybe about 23. And I thought it was going to continue. And they said, no. You're not healthy enough to be in the Air Force. And I was devastated. I didn't know. I'm a planner. I didn't know what to do with my life. I had never lived out on my own, paid rent or anything like that. And I was like, not prepared. I was unstable. Or unstable is the word. And so it led to a point in my life where it was like, what do I do? Who am I? Who am I even? Identity is formed around, you know, that adolescence. And so I identified with the blue. I used to say I bleed blue. That's how much I loved and still love the Air Force. And so I didn't know what to do with my life. And I kind of wandered for a while, for the first time ever, just unstable. Wasn't in my plans.
Yeah. How did you find your stability after you left?
Ah, good question. I stayed at home for, I think, one weekend. And I said I needed peace and quiet for about 6 months. After 6 months, I could probably figure it out from there. And so I moved to Sacramento, and the Air Force had a program with Department of Rehab in California. And so went to them, and they were trying to retrain me. They denied me, actually, at that time, which was further devastating, because they said, you don't have a problem finding a job, because I had the temporary agencies here in Sacramento. So I was employable, but I didn't have a career. And that was my dilemma. And so leaving Department of Rehab, I walked into an office, and they said it was a foster family agency. And I said, what kind of people work here? And the lady was nice enough to send me from our local university, Sacramento State University, the difference between social work and sociology. And I was a sociology major, is what I told her. And so she mailed that to me, and I kind of compared the two. And I said, well, social work all day, every day. So I started my educational career, and it became a career because I was in school for 9 years. And I got a degree every 3 years, my AA, then my bachelor's and my master's. And that's really kind of what started me becoming stable. Because I found purpose again. I found hope again. I took wonderful, wonderful classes such as poverty and homelessness, victimless crimes, which a lot of that dealt with trafficking, prostitution, other things in the world and in our life that we may not see that there's a victim. And of course, mental health, just in case I wanted to become a therapist. I always said, always prepare. In school, they told us, prepare for the just in case. But I knew in my heart that I was to be a social worker.
This is beautiful. In your article, there's this profound moment where you share that you received a direct revelation in prayer, where you kind of realized that you had never learned how to remain stable. And so I would love if you could explain to our listeners the correlation between our childhood experiences of stability or instability and like how we start to learn to navigate all of that because of those experiences, and then how all that impacts how we face challenges as adults.
What I've been saying a lot lately is that mental health is across our lifespan and also across the developmental stages. And so if we think about the community that we're born into, the family that we're born into, whether it's stable or unstable, that affects mostly your emotional being. Your physical can be great or not great, depending on if you are born with health challenges. But what happens is we keep growing in the developmental stage, but then our emotional being is sometimes stunted depending on the instability or the stability in the home. The attachment style between the parents, all of that has been shown in research that that really affects the emotional being of that child growing up. And so, you know, if you think about the developmental stages, you learn how to crawl and then walk and then run and then ride your bike and do all of those things. But if the environment is unstable, your emotional well-being is left behind. And I'll give you an example. I know a lady who her mother was murdered when she was 13. She became a mother at 16 and at 19 and I think 27. But then I've known her a while, and I almost like she was a young mom. But then as she got older, she was listening to hip hop and all those things. And I thought about her life one day, and I said, I think she stopped emotionally growing at 13 because she didn't have a mom to teach her stability emotionally. Before that, she was going in and out of the nightclubs to get her mom out and walking in the streets with bats, you know, to fend off the men, just to get her mom home safely. And I said, it has to be that emotionally she stopped growing and maturing at 13. Has to be. It just made logical sense to me because of the instability that she was raised in. And so childhood experiences affect so much in adulthood. And so instability, as we're raising children or, you know, in community with children, it's just one of those things that we really, really need to be mindful of, because we really can affect the trajectory of their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And I lost my mom at a younger age. I was 23, but my brother was 15. And yeah. I have actually had that reflection that something in him stopped mm-hmm. progressing at that age. So, you know, I think what's really important here is to give our listeners a sense of hope, because these are things we can't control. We can't control when a parent passes or the external circumstances in our lives very often, especially as a child, actually, you have no control at all. But yeah, so how can we give our listeners some hope if anyone's experienced anything like along those lines? We don't want people to be worried about their own children, and, you know, providing like too much stability also sounds like kind of rigidity, right? So how can we feel a sense of healing around this, a possibility for healing?
That's the right word, healing. I truly believe that people can heal through grief and loss. And loss can be anything, a loss of a job. I remember when I wrecked my first car that I'd spent so many years with, I literally had a funeral for my car. And I said, you have served me well. Thank you. And I was crying and everything, because that was my baby. And so and people lose pets. And so grief and loss is, of course, what makes it so hard is that it's unpredictable. And so the hope is that you can heal through it, but you got to go through it. Now, I often say with my clients that the only thing between survival mode and what I call thriver mode is intentional healing. That's it. It's very simple. The challenge is we get off the road. We get in the, you know how that, on the side of the road, you have those bumps.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of, it's supposed to wake you up in case you fall asleep. I call those triggers. And then sometimes the heavier sleepers go over the triggers and then land into the ditch. That's called life is lifing, we've been saying in our culture. And so, but really, we should stay on that path of intentional healing. Doesn't matter if someone or something cuts you off on the middle of the road. You can yell and scream. That's healthy to get it out. However, you're going somewhere intentionally. That's the key.
Mm. Yeah, it's the intentional part. Like, we have to want to do it, right? Absolutely. That's actually like a really big part of healing in so many different systems. I mean, I'm even thinking about the 12 steps in AA. You have to recognize that you want to make a difference and make a change. So that's the intention right there. Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for that. In your article as well, you mentioned how important it is for us to remain stable during the less trying times of life as a kind of a practice for when something bigger comes along. So what advice would you give our listeners to help them remain stable if they're facing a small or a large challenge?
Got to practice peace at all costs. A lot of us say, I'll give you peace of my mind, and you have nothing left for yourself. maintain peace at all cost. Doesn't matter what the situation is, big or small or in between. Whatever brings you peace, whatever brings you joy, hold on to it, because literally your life and your mental health depends on it. Don't give it away. Fight for that. Maintain boundaries for sure. But the key with boundaries is you have to first tell people that it's a boundary. Because a lot of us get mad. We get mad. Oh, they're overstepping my boundaries. And my first question is, did you tell them?
Yeah.
Why told them not to do that? No, did you tell them it was a boundary to begin with? They're like, oh. And so you have to communicate it, you have to maintain it, and then you're able to enforce it.
Yeah.
So all of that works hand in hand. In my office, I have natural sunlight. I have sunflowers. Everything is sunflowery here. I have pictures of nature. I have my corner of kudos from past clients. So if there's a hard day, just in case a client storms out, I feel good about me. So I maintain my joy, maintain my peace, and I don't chase them. I always say that the door is always open.
Yeah, that's it. Because people don't like it when you tell them a boundary, oftentimes. You know, some people accept it and respect it. And those are the people you keep close. Yeah, I love maintaining peace at all costs. And you said, don't give it away. I need a placard or something to remind me. Don't give it away.
This is the thing. We fight hard for it. We fight to get to a place of peace and stability and joy. And once you get there, man, I mean, I allow no one to take it. People can take it off if you let them. So I'm surely not going to give it to them just because they make me mad. I refuse.
Yeah. I know that your article says that we have to find the stability within ourselves in order to manifest it in our lives, or just in order to continue to hold on to that stability. And so, what tools and techniques might you suggest for our listeners to really work on that inner stability? And what does it feel like? How do we know we've accomplished it? Do we ever accomplish it?
For me, it is all about fun. Actually, I didn't even figure that out on my own. I had a lady tell me, she said, I'm going to call you fun until you get it. I was like, what? And she walked away. And I was like, what do you mean? And so at that time, I was really, really struggling with depression. And so for me, once I started having fun, depression stayed far, far, far away from me. I started tapping into my humor, my lightness. I've been called a cheerleader, which I did bring. I was given pom-poms, though. I wasn't raised a cheerleader. But I love celebrating good work. I'm a social worker. Kind of goes hand in hand. So for me, it's fun. For me, it's laughing, looking for reasons to laugh, though. I literally have to look for reasons to laugh. Sometimes I just, my own thoughts make me laugh and I have fun all by myself, just laughing about nothing. Sometimes I can say a sentence and I'll just start laughing out loud. It's just, my sister said, I get so tickled that you tickle yourself. And I said, right. So to me, I took my biggest challenge, which was depression, and I found the antidote, and that's laughing and having fun. And it's actually been proven in research. We call that evidence-based practice. DBT, can't really say the word that the D is. Used to have a speech impediment of all things. But it's DBT. In DBT, one of the biggest components in DBT is pleasurable activities. And so the whole, well, I won't say the whole thing, but one of the aspects in DBT is, what do you do to decrease distress or tolerate distress at a higher level? pleasurable activities is in there. So that tells me enough that I need to have fun all day, every day. So that's what I do. I literally have fun all day, every day.
It is so important. I mean, you know, life goes by quickly. And, you know, one of the parts about life is that we get to experience fun and pleasure and laughter and all of those good things that sometimes are a little bit hard to access in those more challenging moments. So seeking them out and finding that lightness within that you're talking about, that really resonates. Really resonates. Thank you. Thank you. So I also know that something really close to your heart with regard to the need for stability is the need for mental health services in every home, school, church, and community. And I'd love if you could just share a little bit more about why that's so important to you. And if you have a vision for how we might collectively be able to manifest that.
Your questions are so good. Yeah. Mental health is, it is in every part of our lives. And I often say that there is a fine line between healthy mental health and compromised mental health. It often depends on our mood and our focus. Here's the key. Your mood follows your focus. So if I'm focused on the sunflowers in front of my desk, that's where my mood is going to go. Bright, cheery, the greenery in the trees. That's where my mood is going to go. And so if there is not a focus on mental health in every atmosphere and environment, we're not able to catch those who are in crisis. However, we have to be mindful if the person that cuts us off on the road may be going somewhere very important. So I'm not going to drive past them or speed up or you know, mean mug them, as we say in my culture. I'm not going to flip them off and cuss them out because I don't know what's going on in that person's life. I may be mad because they almost killed me, yes. However, I'm going to show kindness. I'm going to show love and compassion because they just may be trying to get to the hospital if their loved one is dying. We don't know. I have to lead with love. I have to lead with kindness because mindful of my mental health, I'm on my journey, intentional journey of healing because I don't want to be in survival mode personally. I want to be thriving. And so if I lead with that kindness, being mindful of my mental health and that person's mental health, that I engage with, and whether it's the grocery store or anywhere else, my vision is to, I would love to take this region. I would love to remove stigma, but I think COVID helped a lot with that, removing stigma for mental health. So now it's really on the forefront of everyone because it was so traumatic for so many of us. Those who had COVID and those who did not, or those who were caring for those with COVID. So thank God. Stigma is kind of not where it used to be. However, I would love, as a veteran, for it to be prominent even in the military. Because little known fact, my medical discharge was mental health related. I literally had an anxiety attack. And they said, you're not healthy to be in the Air Force. And I said, you've got to be kidding. Once I slept and once I ate, I was fine. I was working 12-hour shifts. I went to work the day after April Fool's Day, so I thought they were playing a joke on me, literally. And once I ate and slept, it was like, I said, when can I go home? They're like, you're not going home. You're going home, but just not not to your room. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And so now, my vision for mental health forever is to allow people to just live in whatever truth they find truthful to themselves, knowing that, again, there's a fine line between healthy mental health and compromised mental health.
That is a beautiful vision, a really important one. Removing stigma to really allow the acceptance of wherever someone is in this moment, allowing that to be validated and to show compassion and to not judge or assume, but to come from a place of love and compassion and willingness to offer a helping hand. Yeah, we've all got to bring that into our awareness for sure. Intention towards all of that. Yeah, there's a lot of stigmas that still remain in society. So we have to kind of chip away at that little by little.
And it can be a smile.
Yeah.
It changes someone's whole day.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I don't know. This is silly, but I don't know if you've heard of Red Nose Day here in the UK.
Yes.
It's a comic relief raising money for children in need and in poverty. And a lot of people wear red noses. And it was just the other week. And so I actually wore my red nose when I took my son to school. And then I just loved seeing people's, you know, like a clown nose, basically, right? For anyone listening, they're like, what do you mean red nose? Yeah, like a clown nose, like a little red foam clown nose. And I got so many smiles, people going by me, people in their cars. I decided to wear it on my way home too, walking my dog. My son wasn't even with me. I did feel a little bit self-conscious, I'll say, but I was like, no, this is so much fun. I have got to do this. And like, if someone just to see someone smiling, and it's a kind of smile that's like a child, you know, it's kind of there's something silly and joyful about that smile. And I'm like, yes, I love this.
So important.
Yeah. Shatea, we're going to wrap this up with one last question. And I'm going to ask you, what does being sovereign mean to you?
Sovereign means walking in your authentic power.
Unapologetically walking in your authentic power. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Shatea. This has been a terrific conversation. And for anyone who might be interested in working with you, perhaps you could share a little bit more about your services and how folks can find you online.
I am a licensed clinical social worker in California, which means my license for mental health is in California. Outside of California, I am a global life coach, so I literally can serve anyone in the world, which is fun for me because I love to travel. So wherever you are, I could provide assistance. I am looking forward to getting on the plane to help somebody.
Yeah.
This summer, actually, I do retreats. And so I'm going now, since California is such a big state, I get to fly to Southern California this year and do a retreat there as I do in Northern California. So I specialize in four areas: depression, anxiety, healing through grief and loss, and anger management. However, I can serve anyone that walks through my door with whatever challenge, because they train us to do so in school, which I love. So I have clients now that have challenges in the career field. We handle it. Challenges in the family, co-parenting, just a lot of things. People are dealing with a lot right now. So I can handle just about anything. Those are my four specialties. So what that means is I have programs, 6 to 8 week programs on those particular areas. On IG, I can be found at Shataya_Baker. So that's Shataya_Baker. On Facebook, it is Shataya M. Baker. Or Shatea Baker, if you forget the M. I have both of them. TikTok is Shatea, spelled very differently, S-H-A-T-A-H. That's on TikTok.
Beautiful. And you can find all of that information in the show notes to our listeners. So make sure that you click on those links and go and follow Shateya. She is also offering a very generous free 30-minute consultation to anyone worldwide. So please reach out to her with code SOVEREIGN. And next time we meet, Shateya, I'm going to ask you about your book, but you can find the information about Shateya's book, Just As I Am, on her website. And she has a special for our Sovereign listeners as well. Buy one book, get one book 50% off. So check out that. And Shateya, thank you so very much. This was a beautiful conversation. I have loved every minute of it.
Me too. It was fun.
Thanks so much to Shateya for sharing her story on the Sovereign Magazine podcast. Shateya has kindly offered listeners of the podcast a free 30-minute consultation with her, and that's a worldwide offer, as well as a buy one book, get one book 50% off, just using the code SOVEREIGN, or follow the links in the show notes. You can read Shateya's front cover article in full in the May issue of Sovereign Magazine, which is out now. Just head to sovereign-magazine.com. And thanks to you for listening to this episode. I hope you've enjoyed listening as much as we did creating it for you. You can hear our next episode with our brilliant May contributor, Chris Melville, tomorrow, the 9th of May. And in the meantime, you can follow us on social media at The Sovereign Magazine. And we're always looking for incredible women to be featured in our magazine. So just go to sovereign-magazine.com/get-featured to see how you can be featured in our Global Women's Magazine.